Hello.
Hey Jenna, this is Andrew.
Hi, Andrew. How's it going?
Good, how are you doing?
Good.
You ready for this?
I'm ready.
There's an old saying that says there are two things you should never talk about: politics and religion. But apparently comedians never got this memo. Now there are some comedians who shy away from these a little and focus on broader topics. But there are a lot whose sets seem to focus exclusively on politics and religion. And whether or not that's the type of comedy you tend to enjoy, comedians with a message is a trend that doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And it's something that's been going on in comedy long before Al Franken and Sarah Silverman spoke at the
Please
DNC.
welcome Sarah Silverman and Senator Al Franken.
Remember me? I'm Senator Al Franken, and this past year, I've been hashtag I'm with her.
And I'm Sarah Silverman, and this past year, I've been feeling the burn.
I think like the first night, some reviewer called me a less confident Sarah Silverman, and it was funny. I was like, I'll take it. I will take any comparison to Sarah. I love her.
That's the voice
I'm
of Jenna
Jenna Friedman.
Friedman.
I'm a comedian. I have my first stand-up special coming out on CISO, and it's called American Cunt.
I know it's over the phone, but you did hear that correctly. I guess this is the part of the show where we should say, if you're listening in public or with people who might be offended by those type of words, you may want to put headphones in. And so, welcome to the CISO C Show. I'm Andrew Steven. So I wanted to talk first a little bit about the timing of your special, because these things take a while to make. I mean, you have to write it, you performed it, you travel with it. And for this to come out right during all this election stuff is pretty special.
It was great. I wrote it a year ago for the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and the show has evolved all year. Basically, the whole second half of the show is pretty much about the election, and so I kept having to change jokes and add in jokes, and then when Trump stopped being funny, take out like 15 minutes of stuff about him. And so the fact that CISO was so supportive and helped us get this out was really exciting. We shot it in August. It's still relevant for the most part. The Cosby stuff feels a little old, but he's still kicking, so it's not too dated. And he's still weirdly in the news. And then the only joke that actually, because of political comedy, it changes so fast. So the only joke that actually is stale is I went out on a limb at one point. I was so inspired after the Republican National Convention, and I said that Ted Cruz, I do a joke kind of about how he has integrity because he didn't support Trump, and then he supported him.
Are politics and comedy, I mean, that seems like an issue that, I mean, some people love to combine and then other people shy away from. What is it about that sort of drew you to making these sort of jokes and writing the show?
Well, I got into comedy kind of from like a political paper I wrote about it years ago. So I've always had like a political interest in, or like an interest in that intersection of politics and comedy. And then working at the Daily Show solidified that. And this election particularly is so nuts. It's such a joke on its own, and Trump is such a clown in so many ways that it's almost hard to not use comedy when talking about him.
Do you feel like there's an imperative to sort of bring up some of these topics when you're on stage, or is it just more it's something you're interested in and so it naturally comes out?
I feel really passionate about politics. I do think the personal is the political. A lot of political comedians will say that they're comedians first, and I don't even think that about myself. I'm like an activist first. And if it's funny, that's great. I do think it's tough with political comedy because you don't want to be like ranting to the choir. You don't want to be totally unfunny. So I try to make sure that I wrap things in jokes. But I mean, that's what makes me keep doing it. that interest in what I'm trying to say. And, you know, talking to libertarians and people who are Bernie or bust and trying to get them to vote has been really important. I think hopefully, you know, I'm pretty sure that she'll win, but I also was in Brussels during Brexit, so I think it's anybody's game. And I mean, that's just what keeps me doing what I'm doing.
And whether it's Jon Stewart or Stephen Colbert or Samantha Bee or Bill Maher, I think Jenna finds herself in good company.
And I just, like, you know, I don't know. I just wanted, like, I had a lot to say. And I didn't, like, prior to Sam, it's cool though. Like, Sam Bee's show is excellent.
It's a little hard to hear on the recording, but she says Sam Bee or Samantha Bee's show is excellent.
I wanted to see that prior to that, and I wasn't seeing that, you know, like, I was seeing The Daily Show, which is amazing, but I wasn't seeing politics from a female point of view that men also find funny. She's a legend. I mean, like, she's how I got that job at The Daily Show. She was the first correspondent that I worked with, and we did two pieces together. And my success at The Daily Show is definitely partly because of Sam Bee and Wyatt Cenac, who recommended me for that job, and John.
Well, let's go back a little bit and sort of talk about building up to Edinburgh and then the taping. So you're at The Daily Show. You touched on it a little bit, but what was it like being there?
It was awesome. I was a field producer there, which is, you're basically a filmmaker for Jon Stewart. You can, you know, I didn't realize the extent of responsibility that I'd have at that job, and I might not have taken it if I knew. But by the time I got there, the show was such a well-oiled machine. We had so much creative freedom, and I stayed 2 years longer than I wanted to because he was like, tell whatever stories that you're passionate about, and we'll find a way to make them funny. So I did a piece on Monsanto, on fracking, on OxyContin, and we found ways to make it funny. And so that was really, really cool. And that taught me a lot. It also taught me, in terms of political comedy, how to walk that line and where to walk it. And I think that's kind of the hardest thing and what makes it hard for people to get into that kind of stuff, because there's such a line, and if you step over it, you know, you can kill your career. You know what I mean? Like, it's just really a tricky terrain. But I loved working there. And then when he announced that he was leaving the show, I just kind of felt like it was time to do my own thing. And a friend of mine who was booking a room in Edinburgh, who had wanted me to do something there, she encouraged me to do the show. And I didn't do the whole month just because the dates of The Daily Show didn't really line up. So I did the last 2 weeks of The Fringe last year. And then I worked with CISO on a project there, and they liked The Fringe show. And so kind of a couple months later, we decided that maybe I should shoot a special.
Yeah.
And kind of like, it's revisionist history. I don't really know how it went down. This whole year's been a blur.
I think the best way to age gracefully as a woman is to have been born a man.
This is from Jenna's special, American Cunt.
Shakespeare used the word cunt, Chaucer, James Joyce, so many great men. Throughout history have used the word cunt. And I'm sure women would have too, if we were taught how to read. I have so many abortion jokes. A, they just keep writing themselves, but the best thing about abortion jokes is that no one tries to steal them. It's so hard for a white woman in 2016 to go to jail that we have a TV show about the one time it happened. Is anyone in here voting for Trump? It's a free country. It won't be.
I had one show in D.C. at the Alamo Draft House in Arlington, Virginia, right before I went to Edinburgh. And it was still a workshop version of the current show. But the feedback that I got from that crowd was so positive. It made me just really want to do the show in America for Americans. That was like the moment I realized, like, oh, the show is, I would love to do it here, because it just felt like kind of relevant in a way that it didn't feel talking to a UK crowd. Like when you're talking about America to a foreign crowd, you can like just kind of get away with saying stuff because they don't know. You can just kind of like play. So you do have to make sure everything you say is right on when you're talking to an American audience. But that, it was like right before I went over to Edinburgh that I was like, oh, I really want to do this for, I didn't think I was ever going to film it as a special until I met with CISO and they were like, well, filming specials. But I knew I wanted to do it for like an American audience.
Were you worried at all about that you might have to change the title?
No, but that's the thing about CISO. They like didn't censor me at all. I had like a couple bits about ISIS that I pulled back on because it was too much, but I left, you know, a third of my ISIS material in the show, and they didn't even, they gave me no creative notes. It was the coolest thing, because all through doing comedy, working at Letterman, and I said the Daily Show was really liberating, but still you're writing for someone else. Like, this was the first time that I just kind of like had that amount of like complete creative control. They were awesome. Like, I censored it in the UK on the poster because they had asked it to. But CISO's not censoring it. And that, to me, is awesome. And, like, it's just such a testament to how cool the internet can be. And, yeah. And that word, even in the past month, that word has, like, to me, become, it just kind of changed it. I've never thought of that word. In the show, I just talk about, like, I'm not trying to reclaim it. I literally, it was just because the show was for UK audience, and that word is a very endearing term in the UK, so it's kind of a play on that.
Yeah.
But with the whole Trump pussy grabbing bullshit, like, that word now is, it's important that it's out there, because and it's crazy to me that the word pussy resonated in such a negative way with his base, but everything else he said did prior to that didn't. So it's cool that we're putting these words out there, because it's like, you know, cunt isn't a bad word, but, you know, it depends, obviously. Like, I don't think cunt is on any level as bad as, you know, like the N-word or anything like that. But just the fact that, like, words have so much power is interesting to me.
Do you have like a website that you want to plug, or any upcoming tour dates or anything?
I don't.
All right.
Yeah, just watch American Cut on October 20th.
Perfect. Thanks so much.
Cool. Thank you.
You can see American Cunt at CISO.com, which kicks off their 12-week stand-up streaming fest. And follow her on Twitter, even though she may think otherwise.
Yeah, it's just, I'm on Twitter at my name, but I wouldn't follow me on Twitter unless, like, you're a weirdo, because I just sometimes...
Hey, thanks for calling me a weirdo.
I'll, like, tweet about crazy things, mostly infectious diseases, and then if I'm, like, watching something, sometimes I'll just live tweet it and spoil it for everybody. So, you know, it's a mixed bag.
As we talked about earlier, comedy and politics have a long history of playing together. And for this last segment, Decider and Playboy contributor Scott Porch has another example.
In the 1980s, New York Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan famously said that you're entitled to your own opinions, but not your own facts. In the early 2000s, Stephen Colbert revised that notion to what he called truthiness. I'm no fan of dictionaries or reference books, he said on the very first episode of The Colbert Report. They're elitist, constantly telling us what is or isn't true, or what did or didn't happen. Truthiness, Colbert said, is what feels right. Well, we're way beyond that. When Howard Stern asked Donald Trump years ago if he supported the Iraq War, Trump said he did. Today, he says he didn't. Trump has occupied so many sides of so many issues that his campaign logo should be Schrodinger's cat, hiding in that hermetically sealed box, both dead and alive, forever, or at least until Election Day. I'm not sure if he so frequently says, "Believe me," to convince us or convince himself.
And believe me, that's why I'm going to be elected president, folks. Believe me, believe me, believe me, believe me. When I'm president, believe me, believe me, believe me. Oh, believe me.
But it's not just Donald Trump. We all live in a version of reality that's at least some part of our own choosing. The truth is what I see in front of me, even if it may not be what you see in front of you. The truth is what's in your inbox, on your Twitter feed, and on your cable news. Which brings me to aliens.
I didn't see that coming. Actually, I did, because I knew the story that Scott was going to be telling here, but it was funnier if I didn't see it coming.
Do you believe they're out there?
Here's a clip of Hillary Clinton on Jimmy Kimmel in March of 2016.
We had your husband, President Clinton, on the show. He said, I asked him about UFOs and Area 51, and if you looked in, because if I was president, that's the first thing I do. I go right into those files and see what was going on.
Right.
And he said that he did do that.
Yes.
And that he didn't find anything.
Well, I'm gonna do it again.
Yeah, why not?
Right? And you know, there's a new name. It's unexplained aerial phenomenon.
Unexplained aerial phenomenon,
yep,
really?
Yep, UAP. That's the latest nomenclature.
I like the old one. I like UFO. I don't know why.
Well, I think we can use them interchangeably, but I would like us to go into those files and hopefully make as much of that public as possible. If there's nothing there, let's tell people there's nothing there.
What if there is something there?
Well, if there is something there, unless it's a, you know, threat to national security, I think we ought to share it with the public.
Well, what if everybody's all hopped up on medical marijuana and everybody gets paranoid? I would love
it. That's why I want more research.
If you share it with me, I'll decide what is the best course of action. I really have my ear to the ground.
Do they walk among us? Is Barack Obama actually one of them? TBS's terrific new half-hour comedy, People of Earth, is about a support group for UFO abductees. At least they think they were abducted. Their stories don't quite match up. For some, the aliens look like the little green men that you'd expect. For others, the aliens are tall and handsome with long silver hair, like Legolas from Lord of the Rings. And there's still another faction that thinks they look like the lizard people from V. People of Earth, from The Office creator Greg Daniels and writer David Jenkins, is about believers.
Believe me.
They all believe, and that, today, is the same thing as the truth.
Reptilians are shapeshifters. They are psychopathic.
Sure.
They live amongst us. Almost every U.S. president, past and current, was a reptilian.
Nixon?
Nixon.
Reagan?
Reagan.
Lincoln?
Lincoln. One of the most lizardy presidents out there.
What?
One of the biggest.
Wow.
They've lived amongst us for centuries.
Actually, a number of theories on that.
It's a stone cold fact, Jerry, and you know it.
I'm just saying.
Wyatt Cenac, who hosts the CISO stand-up series Night Train, stars as journalist Ozzie Graham, who's sent to write about the support group. Anna Gasteyer from Saturday Night Live and Suburgatory, Brian Husky from Another Period, and Oscar Nunez of The Office anchor a solid and understated cast of misfits. Graham is polite and respectful to the support group, but privately, he thinks they're kooks. Whether they're right or wrong about the aliens, they all sincerely believe they're right, and who are you to say otherwise? They're also lonely, and the group is a social structure that most of them otherwise wouldn't have. Whether they would admit it or not, they need each other. And meeting once a week to talk about their alien encounters, real or imagined, is as harmless as a book club.
It's interesting to me because, well, last time we talked about Wyatt Cenac, Scott Poirtz was actually on the podcast, along with writer Julie Seebaugh. And she brought up the point that his Night Train show, while it's ostensibly a stand-up show, is really a show about community. A show that an audience in a neighborhood looks forward to attending every time it happens. Julie Seba also said that Wyatt Cenac only seems to be taking projects that he actually wants to do. And so with People of Earth, another show about a community, there seems to be a similar theme.
Over time, their other problems, or maybe their actual problems, start to emerge, and the series gradually becomes more about empathy and understanding. Whether these encounters are in their heads, a big misunderstanding, or maybe, just maybe, actual extraterrestrials, there's definitely something up in the weird Twin Peaksy town of Beacon. The series is highly serialized with twists or cliffhangers at the end of the episodes, as on NBC's The Good Place, another new series about big picture ideas masquerading as light comedy. Over the course of the first four episodes of People of Earth that TBS provided for review, things certainly get weird. Hallucinations, talking deer, etc. People of Earth has the elements of pain and loneliness that underlie sadcoms like FX's Louie and Amazon's One Mississippi, but those shows aren't really comedies. People of Earth most definitely is, and it's one worth watching. Believe me.
Believe me.
Thanks to Scott Porch. You can find more of his work at scottporch.com. And if you want to see Wyatt Cenac, be sure to check him out both on CISO's Night Train and TBS's People of Earth. Thanks so much for listening this week. If you'd like to, you can follow us on Twitter at CISO Show. That's S-E-E-S-O Show. We try to post interesting articles and other content in between each episode. Thanks again to Scott and Jenna for being on the show. And I hope you have a great week.
I'm Jamie Flam, and I'm the artistic director of the Hollywood Improv. Basically, that means I'm the one responsible for booking comedians, producing shows, and making sure every night at the club is magical. You might even call me the gatekeeper. Okay, so not really, but maybe, I don't know. Outside of my job at the Improv, I also perform and write comedy, which means I sit in front of many gatekeepers myself. It's an interesting dynamic, but it's helped me learn a lot as well. Now I host a podcast about it. Each week I talk with bookers, producers, decision makers, performers, and more.
Hey, this is Cole Stratton.
This is Janet Varney.
This is Troy Conrad.
This is Todd Glass, and you're listening to Gatekeeper.
It's an inside look at the art of saying yes and no. Also, there are sound effects. Be sure to subscribe to Gatekeeper on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can find more info at sideshownetwork.tv.